Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Mpuga. And this evening we'll talk about South Sudan peace talks going on in Addis Ababa. And with us tonight is Dr. Jock Madut Jock. He's the co-founder of the Sword Institute. He's also a professor at the Department of History at Loyola Marymount University in California. Good afternoon, I guess it's morning in California, Dr. Ojok.
That's right. Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
Welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Happy to be here.
Thank you. Yeah. And joining me here in studio is my colleague, Patrick Deya. Patrick, once again, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Douglas.
Yes, as I said, we'll be talking about the ongoing peace talks in Ethiopia about South Sudan. This is the latest round of regional facilitated peace talks between the Juba government and the armed opposition faction under the leadership of former Vice President Riek Machar. First of all, let me go to California. Jock Madut Jock, what are you hearing from the ongoing talks now?
Well, there are conflicting reports. On the one hand, the government delegation has announced that they are very hopeful that the progress being made is definitely registering a sign of hope that a settlement will be reached by the deadline, which is coming up on March 4th. But also, at the same time, they are reporting some sticky points in the process, particularly the thematic committees, where committees are breaking out and discussing issues to do with security arrangements, with the economic cost of the war, things related to institutional reforms and the like. They seem to be presenting a bit of a stumbling block to the whole process.
I see. Talking of people expressing optimism, being hopeful, we must remind our listeners this is the first time they have sort of moved towards an agreement which has not worked.
Well, certainly, it's not the first time for people of South Sudan to hope that a round of peace talks might produce something positive. And in fact, I think we have reached a point where people remain hopeful but not holding their breath that, in fact, a peace settlement will be reached. You will be reminded that many agreements have been, many promises have been made since January 23rd last year when the first ceasefire or other cessation of hostilities were signed but were not respected. But at the moment, I think the combination of factors make this hope a little more concrete. For example, there is the deadline, which the IGAD mediator, chief mediator, Ambassador Seyoum Mesfin, says this has got to be the last chance for the leaders of South Sudan to prioritize the welfare of their people above their own personal ambitions. There is also the UN Security Council now discussing possibilities of imposing sanctions on the leaders who are obstructing peace. Then there is the regional leaders within East Africa are expressing frustration and are tired of these broken promises being made by the leaders of South Sudan. There is the humanitarian crisis, which is threatening the welfare of nearly 2 million people. And then there is the looming economic crisis because of the cost of war. So a combination of these things might compel the leaders in South Sudan to finally give in to their own personal ambitions and for once think about the country and move forward with a political settlement.
I see. Patrick, you just had our friend Jock Madut Jock mention a series of these sticking points. But first of all, South Sudan being the newest country, especially in East African region, this must be having a terrible impact on the neighbors.
I think that a destabilized South Sudan would definitely have a destabilizing effect in the East African neighbors. We know that there has been talks about South Sudan joining the East African Community, which still is in its working stage.
Mm-hmm.
A South Sudan that is not stable would probably not move to that extent, and that has a big economic impact.
Mm-hmm.
For one, apart from the social. The economic impact is we know that there has been conversation about the oil pipeline, you know, that was signed to go through the port of Lamu in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
That would be in jeopardy. And of course, this, you know, the oil pipeline is looked at as part of employment. And therefore, you know, bringing, you know, a huge number of people into, you know, a better standard of living. A destabilized Sudan would definitely be, you know, would cause things that displacement of people.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you know, the South Sudanese being forced out of their region because of the war, and being refugees in other countries. Kenya has had a very large number of refugees from Sudan, Somalia, and this puts some pressure on the neighboring countries.
I
so I think, you know, it would have a big impact.
Let me go back to California. Both of you mentioned the regional issue, and you also mentioned earlier that the regional leaders are getting frustrated. What do you say to those people who say that some of the regional leaders or some countries in the neighborhood are part of responsible for the ongoing crisis in that they have taken sides?
Well, I mean... The nature of international relations is such that, of course, every country has an interest. So it would be absurd to discount the interest of the East African regional leaders in the dynamics in South Sudan, one way or the other. But that being said, it doesn't mean that anybody in the region would wish for this conflict to continue. As Douglas has just stated, it is not to anybody's interest that South Sudan remain destabilized. So even though the leaders in East Africa are involved in one form or another, I think their involvement is towards finding a peaceful settlement for this crisis in the shortest possible time.
Although they are, I'll throw this both to both of you, although there are those who say some leaders would prefer this conflict to be resolved militarily. For instance, they have mentioned the Ugandan leader, Museveni, who sent troops from day one to Juba, that some of them would prefer a military solution to this conflict.
I think what sometimes throws a wrench into any of you know, an agreement or a settlement to leadership is exactly that.
Mm.
The different leaders within East Africa, although their paramount goal would to see a stabilized Sudan, they have themselves certain interests and maybe to establish certain influence, and therefore, in my opinion, I think. Because of those interests, either on a personal level or on just being seen as the driver to the peace talks, it may you know, put the people that are actually in the talk at some you know, suspicion of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because again of interest from the different leaders within East Africa.
Mm-hmm.
They have to want influence either, and therefore they will take sides to who they want to be there. And that, I think, throws in a wrench to the
Dr.
talks.
Maduta Jok, what are you hearing as far as, because I've heard that one of the sting points is withdrawal of foreign troops from Sudan, South Sudan. How big a factor is that one?
Well, it's a major factor because the opposition, the SPLA in opposition, have been making this point since day one that unless foreign troops are taken out, they would not be willing to compromise on this. But in of late, I think this has been watered down a little bit. This position of the armed opposition has not been coming up as frequently as it did in the past. So my feeling is that so long as there is an agreement on power sharing between the government and the rebels, so long as there is an agreement on the security arrangement, what happens with the two armies in the case of a peace agreement, what happens with the economic arrangement such that there would be some sort of compensation for the war-affected areas, I think the question of the removal of foreign troops will be secondary to all of this. So I think, as Douglas pointed out, I think it remains an issue, and it's not just an issue in terms of the presence of foreign troops, but it is also an issue because of the perception that IGAD cannot have it both ways, to be the mediator and at the same time having some of its members taking sides. It makes them not the ideal mediator, in the sense that if Salva Kiir, the president of South Sudan, is a member, is considered an equal in the meetings of East African leaders, but at the same time he's party to a conflict, and President Museveni is party to the conflict, but also a member of the same group that is trying to mediate, it gives all the other groups a sense that the process is not fair, and it is not, and the leaders are partisan.
That perception is very, very strong. I mean, in any negotiation, if there is a perception that the key negotiators are taking sides, it causes a very big suspicion. And I think maybe the thing that maybe needs to be pulled back is, should Museveni pull out all his troops and maybe have, if there's need for security reasons, because I don't know whether withdrawing foreign troops completely in itself would be of any help. But if there could be a combined forces from all the countries that support this move support this negotiation, and there's no perception of any one of the East African countries' leaders taking sides. Mm-hmm. And he brings up a very good point. How can you negotiate at the table with people, the opposition are at a lesser point in terms of what their power is at the table? Mm-hmm. You have President Kiir and at the same level as the other presidents, and yet it seems to be supported, just by virtue of being a president among other presidents. I don't think it gives a very good equal playing field.
I see. Well, gentlemen, hold your thought. Let's take a short break. We'll be back again to continue our discussion of the ongoing South Sudan peace talks.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent, old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the South Sudan Peace Talks. Our panelists are Dr. Jock Madot Jock, co-founder of the SAD Institute. He's also a professor at the Department of History at Loyola Marymount University in California. and my colleague here, Patrick Dare, and I'm your host, Douglas Mpoga, here in Studio 9. We mentioned the pressure exerted on the peace negotiators in Addis Ababa now, from IGAD, from UN Security Council. The other day, issued a stern warning, and the frustration from regional leaders. Now, Madut Jok, what's the fear that this pressure may lead to a superficial, superfluous agreement that may not hold?
Well, this is the crux of the matter, really. You know that it has become almost a tradition in Africa that when a conflict erupts, it has to be settled through a peaceful negotiation. and the temptation to go for a quick political settlement between the elite, the ones who are holding guns, the ones who are confronting each other, are the ones you want to compromise, I mean to reconcile very quickly in order to end the death and mayhem.
Mm-hmm.
But when that happens, you risk having a shorter peace agreement that does not hold very long. I mean, the memories of the CPA between Sudan and South Sudan are very fresh on our minds. In fact, the mistakes made in the CPA may well be a leading cause of the current crisis in South Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
So that's usually a major concern. But on the other hand, if you say, let us do a better peace, the one that takes long and more deliberate and digs up the root causes and work for accountability for war crimes, justice for the victims, that sort of agreement is usually not very easy to get. And it might take a long time, and in the meanwhile, people are still dying. So the risk the dilemma is, should we go for a quick fix to end the death, or should we go for a prolonged process that settles the conflict in a way that it will prevent a return to war in a short time? That is the dilemma where we are today. It doesn't have to be either or. It doesn't have to be either you get a good peace or a bad peace.
Yes, but
you have to have some kind of middle ground.
I see. I'll throw this on to both of you. There are some analysts who have pointed out that may be sort of a band-aid, where if the thing is at the top, and where you actually reward the principals who have been fighting each other, you come up with a power-sharing agreement. If not involved the masses, the civil society organizations, how does such an agreement hold?
Exactly. Well, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I think there has to be, the larger interest must be on the people of South Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
And because if the agreement is a quick fix for the top people, we know what that, the interest shifts very, very quickly.
Mm.
And therefore, it just becomes a quicksand to sink back, the situation into where it began, and therefore prolong the situation. So, as Professor says, I think there needs to be some middle ground, but that middle ground must first meet the more bigger issue of what are the benefits for the people of South Sudan, not the benefits of those people at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, in that case, how do you get national healing, Dr. Jok?
Well, I think the whole peace process has to be sequential. The way to break that dilemma is what began in January 2014, where they had a cessation of hostilities. If that agreement was to be monitored and implemented and to hold, it means that the number of people dying in the course of the war is reduced greatly.
Mm-hmm.
So then if there is no more death, it is now the time for the mediators and the delegation to take time and be more didactic in terms of tackling the root causes of this problem. Because, you know, what happened in January, in December 2013 when the war began was just a trigger.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole host of causes, why the conflict spread so fast, why so many people joined it, all these young people joined, it is because there are many, many problems that were not addressed in terms of nation building and state building in South Sudan. So going back to the root causes of the conflict can be done so long as there is no, so long as in the immediate sense people are not dying from violence. And so I think that is the middle ground. And then you move to the next level to reach a political settlement where you now set out the reconcile the disagreements between the political leaders and restore the government. And then the next level is the where the peace, the making of peace actually begins by going back to the communities and sorting out all the disagreements and confrontations that have been going on for a long time between ethnic groups, the wounds of the old liberation wars, the fractures in the social cohesion. All of this will then need to be done once the guns are silent and once there is a government which has been made to commit to a program of nation building that involves repair of ethnic relations that have been wrecked throughout the many decades of conflict and violence.
Patrick, I hear what Dr. Jock, Madut Jock is saying, but again, there are those who say, wouldn't it be expecting too much for principals who couldn't fix this, who couldn't go for these reforms, who couldn't lay the foundation for the new nation, who failed to do that in the time past with rampant corruption and some abuse of power, to expect those very same principals to now come, go ahead and implement all these things?
Yeah, I mean, that suspicion will always be there because we know that talks have come up before and they've not worked. Very little things trigger the violence.
Mm.
So, again, as the professor says, I think there needs to be a period of moratorium. A moratorium period where the leaders, because, again, these leaders have the power. They have people who follow them. And the moment they show some dissatisfaction, it definitely goes down to the base,
mm-hmm.
and the violence is sparked. So if there could be an agreement of a period of complete gun silence,
mm-hmm.
and within that period, there's also some structures that are being put in place, which can serve as the springboard to really get down to the people. Because, again, if without strong structures within any government, you know, you talk about corruption, there's need to develop agriculture. When people are hungry, you can't tell them anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, setting up schools, you know, health centers, things that will start to make people feel that something is being done to make their lives better.
Mm-hmm.
I think that probably would start drawing people away from thinking about war and conflict among themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Madut Jock, what are you are hearing from your sources? Is there a likely peace agreement to include power sharing? Is that correct?
Yes, that is the biggest. That is the main. That's the main portion of the current talk. The power sharing and the pre-interim government period, and then the interim period, and then elections. So there is the power sharing. The problem with the power sharing now is this. You will recall that there was intra-SPLM reunification dialogue going on in Arusha, Tanzania,
mm-hmm.
In which the all the different factions of the SPLM, the ruling party, have agreed to reunify, including the SPLM in opposition, the armed wing, and including the former political detainees and the SPLM in government. They have all agreed to unify. So then you have one ruling party fighting each other. Now, if you have unified and you have laid out a framework for return of everybody to the party, how then does one party share power among its own members?
Yeah, because there's no, is it not true
if you are all members of one party, what power sharing are you talking about?
Exactly. But there are those who are saying, quoting some delegates, saying that the Arusha agreement is out of the question now. If there's a peace agreement, it will supersede the Arusha agreement. Are you hearing
yeah,
that?
I think that is the position that came up from the armed opposition. And so the government is saying, from now on, I think we are just discussing power sharing as if Arusha doesn't exist. So I think it, for the moment, Arusha will have to be suspended. And then once a peace deal has been made, the implementation of it will then be done from the point of view of what was reached in Arusha. So that is one major sticking point, but I think they have made progress on that level. The other problems areas, of course, include the issue of security arrangements. What happens to the fighting forces in the instant of a peace agreement signed today in Addis? How do you translate that into peace, actually, on the ground within South Sudan?
So,
if the warring parties are still going to maintain their own armies, or whether they are going to merge them, that process needs to be worked out before they leave Addis Ababa.
In other words, if there's a peace agreement, it restores the status quo as it was before Riek Machar was fired by Salva Kiir.
Right. So if that is the case, how does the peace agreement signed in a foreign country become actually peace in the lives of everyday people tomorrow in South Sudan?
So, if
it is simply a restoration of the old status quo, what would all this death have been done for? What is the point of having fought all this war if all you are going to get is what you had in the first place?
I see. Patrick, we're running out of time, but briefly, is there a possibility that these leaders could just be wanting to buy time, head a ceasefire, and to reorganize and figure out the next move?
I think there's probably that possibility that you go through the Arusha thing. Really, does not really make sense. Now they're going through this other one. Nobody knows whether it's suspicious that they're really going into. If they're not solving the bigger issues, then one has to wonder why they're going through this process.
And lastly, in the last few seconds, are you optimistic about the outcome of these talks?
I have to be optimistic. That is the ordinary citizen who is desperate for peace speaking, not the analyst in me.
I see. Well, we shall be following and see what eventually comes out of these talks. We shall keep our ears to the ground to see what comes out. And that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Dr. Jock Madut Jock, co-founder of the SAD Institute, also professor at the Department of History at Loyola Marymount University in California. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. And thank you, Patrick, for being on the show once again.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Our producer was Kwame Ofori, and we'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can hear our roundtable on the internet. You just have to go to our main website at www.voanews.com, click on programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable, and you can listen to the program once again. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Ifoga in Washington, wishing you a peaceful week.
Aujourd'hui sur VOA Afrique.